Blog Talk Radio.
Anxiety sets in, I'm starting to pace. My nerves unsettle, sweat drips my face. Hands tight, can't escape this decision I make. Heart racing, my faith says this is my fate. I just brace and I take in the face of adversity. Tasting this certainty, the breaks ain't hurting me. Gain on a bomb, my pain stronger. Fame smarter, street smarter, train harder. Can't stop me, drop me, I'm not losing. I'm too fast, lightning even when I'm not moving. All heart, leave these cowards on cold. I'm hot, not to mention all the power I hold. Keep moving, keep training, headstrong. Be patient, meet them head to head. I don't care if it's the least safest. Not stop and have a promise to prove I'm a fighter. It's not an option to lose.
Shelly and Show. It is Wednesday night. It is my Thursday. Tomorrow's my Friday. Well, it's half the week, so everybody get ready to halfway potty because we're almost there to Friday. Anyway, I have a very special guest on my show tonight, and he will be talking about what he's been doing in entertainment business, just like the rest of us, you know, or working hard to make your dream. And to remember that on my show, it's about inspiration, dreams, love, life, and, of course, maybe some talks about Jackie Chan, the man who I want to work with. Now, remember, if you do want to call into the radio show, please be respectful. Don't talk about religion, sexual orientation, and anything that is really stuff that I really don't want to talk about because my show is about dreams. And anyway, I think my special guest is come on the air right now and hold. So let me see if I can bring him on. Give me one moment. And by the way, the call-in numbers are 347-989-1473, 347-989-1473. And the other guest call-in number is 877-907-7217, 877-907-7217. Okay, here we go. Hello, caller. You're on the air.
Hey, how are you? It's good to be talking to you.
Oh, hi. Is it Jack?
This is Jack.
Hi. I got my little Furbo co-host, Jackie Chan Kitty, here with me. How you doing?
Nice. It's a good name.
So how are you?
I am quite good.
So I finally got you on the show. I've only mostly, you know, read about stuff through the internet, you know, seeing some stuff there. And I think there was one thing to do with the battleship. And, you know, I remember some sort of movie or something, I think.
I've actually shot with myself, Alexander Zanzopoulos, and Joel Brook. We've done two films on the ship, the USS Salem. It is actually the world's largest all-gun heavy cruiser, and it's now a floating museum in Massachusetts.
That's really awesome, and I want you to talk more about, you know, your films and stuff, and if you want to backtrack, let me know first how you got into, you know, into the industry and stuff, and, you know, how you got into making the films, and then we can talk about your films. So how did you get into what you're doing now today?
Actually, that was a freak coincidence, which is actually the way most things work, I've come to believe.
Yeah.
I was the next-door neighbor of a kid who got a DV cam when DV cams were cool, like, late 90s. And he and his friend were bored, and they made a two-minute monster flick. Well, they didn't even have a monster. They just pretended there was a monster there. And it was hysterical. Well, I had another friend who saw this, and he always had to one-up everything. And he was kind of jealous that everybody thought that flick was funny. So he said, well, if they can do that, we should make a feature. And we had never even, you know, thought of making a film before that point. So as soon as we got talking about making a feature, we got everybody, you know, around and in the local basketball team and everything helping out. We were still in high school. I was the one guy who was always writing. So they said, well, since you're writing, write us a script. So I wrote a script. And when I got that done, they said, well, since you wrote the script, you should direct it since, you know the script. I was like, all right, whatever. So I directed it, and the film was basically Monty Python and the Holy Grail with lots of crazy special effects. but because it was something that we had all sat around and we said, you know, if we hadn't spent so much time getting ready for it, we would have bailed on it because we had no idea what we were doing. And, like, we literally got out there with, like, okay, you know, we're going to digital a dragon in over here. But nobody had any idea how to digital anything in. It was just like, and we're like, well, we'll figure it out sometime later. And everything was approached that way. But because we got ourselves so far in that we had to figure out how to do it, we'd spend years, about a year building up to it and building a very authentic armor and all kinds of stuff. I still got a full suit of armor, and I think almost everybody involved in the project still has it, has their own. But anyway, so we had just been too far in to bail on the project. And so we kept going. We figured out how to digital the dragons in. We made one of my favorite sequences. We had a magician who was throwing lightning bolts all over the place, burned down a bunch of people into just skeletons, lots of fun stuff like that. By the time we'd finished that, you know, we were like, oh, okay, that was, we were pretty burned out, but we thought it was cool. And I really didn't go back to thinking about film seriously as anything but, you know, something I did for fun once, you know, and burned up about a year in high school. And I went back to, and I went to college and studied to be a computer programmer. And I realized quite quickly that computer programming got to be routine. Even if you're programming video games, which was what I meant to program, and I did the artificial intelligence and physics engines, and I've done a couple of those, and they were a lot of fun, but I realized very quickly, once you programmed one artificial intelligence, all of the artificial intelligences were basically the same. Once you program one physics engine, no big surprise, they're all the same. And I got bored. And so I said, I'm going to go into film because it's the one area where I really feel there is nothing harder than film. And I didn't want to waste my life doing something easy. So that's my story.
Okay, so how did you start to advance into other films, like actual films?
The first one I did was... in essence, I just said, well, I wanted to be a director, and I really don't think I could be wrong, but I think it's hard to work your way up through the ranks of just saying, I'm going to volunteer on this project, and somebody's going to notice me and make me a director of the next film. That just doesn't seem like a reasonable expectation to me. I would love it if the world worked that way, though. That would be cool. So I said, you know, I'm going to have to make that opportunity. So I wrote a script, and I passed it around a little bit. I found a local actor who wanted to star it. I found a actually, I should put names to this. Nick Marcucci, who was a local actor. He's now in L.A., Hollywood, something like that. He was a local actor. He wanted to star. I found another guy in Texas, Glenn Prazel, who is a businessman, but he's been moving into acting as something that he has become more and more fascinated with himself. And he'd produced several films at that point. He saw the script for my film, really liked it, and said that he wanted to help out with the film. And I told him honestly, I said, this film has really no budget. I can't afford much. And he said, no, I'm going to come up here and I'm going to help you out just because I want to help you out. And so he was really great as well. But the film was basically made for basically the cost of the camera, some food and things like that.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
And but I made some great connections, like Glenn Prazel, and that film won a Remy at Houston World Fest. It won Best Director at Atlantic City Film Festival, and Best New Director.
What was the name of the film?
Hitting the Wall.
Okay, what was it about?
It was about a runner who injured himself and had to find a new identity. I essentially wanted to take your normal story and turn it backwards. Most films have the story of a normal guy who becomes a hero by the end of the film. But the honest truth is, most of us, as we grow up, we see ourselves as heroes. And we realize, as life goes on, that we're actually normal people. And I wanted a story that was about that. It was about somebody coming to grips with being a normal person, as opposed to some normal guy just realizing he's half Messiah, which is pretty silly. and really doesn't happen to any of us. Sorry, world. So I wanted to write a story about a guy realizing he was normal and dealing with that. So it's a sports drama.
So what did you move on to next? How many films did you do after that? What was your next project?
Next project was the film. Well, I've done. I'm only actually mentioning feature lengths.
Okay, no, that's perfectly fine. Whatever you want to talk about, you know, you're the guest, and you get to do this.
I'm going to burn up too much time if I mention the little shorts between. But the next feature length was Isabel, which I will be releasing the trailer for that in just a couple days. It would have been out a couple days ago, but my computer decided to hate me.
That's always the way with things.
Computers just... Actually, most technology does not get along with me.
Same here.
So the next feature was Isabel, and that is a story about look at it this way. It's a father, a man who was married to a woman that he was completely in love with. She broke up with him, and he failed to deal with that properly. And he never moved on in his life personally, but at the same time, because he couldn't deal with seeing his ex-wife, he never interacted with his daughter ever since his wife left him. So she left him when the daughter was about 8. About 12 years later, the daughter has come down with a disease and needs to move back in with him because she can't take care of herself, at least temporarily. And so it's a very interesting story about a guy trying to take a second chance at being a father when his daughter really feels it's far too late for him to do that. At the same time, we have a romantic interest entering his life as well. So he's trying to move on and fix old problems throughout the film. And I decided that I really wanted the rugged, alone separation quality. So I filmed it out in Maine, out in the islands, and it was, of course, excellent, beautiful location, but also had that great isolation from everyone out in the islands off coastal Maine.
Oh, what did you say it's called? Hitting the Wall?
Hitting the Wall is the first one. This one's Isabel.
Okay, so that's, what was the one called with the daughter, Isabel?
Isabel, yep.
Okay, because it's that, for some reason, it sounds like something I might have seen, but you said it was, how long was it?
It's a feature film, but you wouldn't have seen it yet. It's just coming out now. It's going to festivals this year.
Oh, okay. I don't know, because I'm pulling up your page, and I'm trying to find it on your page. Maybe that's...
I actually don't have it on my... I didn't put it on my IMDb page yet, so...
Okay, because I actually have your Facebook page up, and I was trying to find out.
Yeah,
if
you type in Isabel Love Story, you can get up the Facebook page.
Oh, okay, because I was trying to find the one about the battleship, because I see something about, if I can pronounce it right.
I actually have several.
Wow, you've been doing a lot, like Skookum, movie Skook. How do you say it, Skook?
Skookum.
Huh. So is it a horror film?
That's kind of a horror adventure. Skookum is a film that we're actually currently raising money for, well, both through investors and through Indiegogo. It's a crowdfunding platform, kind of like Kickstarter. I'm not sure if either of those are sources you've heard of. But Skookum is a story about a Bigfoot. And actually, it's really fun because it has been endorsed by Dr. Jeff Meldrum, who is considered the world's foremost expert in cryptozoology, particularly.
Oh my gosh, I think I've seen it because I watch really weird things, and you can go on YouTube and watch anything, and it's like, I don't know, it's not a hunter, but they have something. I bet you, if you remind me right on my Facebook wall of a guy's name, and I'll look it up and I'll let you know. I bet you I've watched stuff because I Google the weirdest thing because they say about there's a Bigfoot in Maine. So it's like, oh my gosh, because we're filming. I'm out here in Maine in all this land, and we're filming our film Valkyr. And I'm like, am I going to see a Bigfoot? Am I going to see a Bigfoot? So I Google, and I guess there is a thing up here in Maine, but I don't think that guy has anything to do with Maine, right? It was something else he's part of?
I'm not sure exactly all his areas of involvement. I know he is involved in a whole lot of things, so I would not be surprised. I have to admit a little handicap in this area. I came at this more from a filmmaking perspective than a Bigfoot perspective. So although I have some knowledge of it, I'm a little bit limited in what I can say about actual Bigfoot area.
Okay. but it sounds kind of fun. Did you get all the casting done, or did you have to wait till you get the funding?
The casting is about... I'm going to say 80% done now. So there's a few spots left, but mostly completed. And actually, if you go to skookumthemovie.com, you can see the trailer for the film. We had that shot before we even really started doing anything on it, just so we could have some great promotionals on it. And I love the look of the trailer. The cinematographer really nailed it. And the effects dude in the end, sometimes people just make those stupid black and white scrolling credits And sometimes people go the extra mile and they make the credits just look awesome. The guy really did credits. Just like, I've actually watched the credits several times and just been like, I love those credits. It was good work.
I'll have to see, because it's like, it doesn't allow me, since I'm on the show, I'll go, mm-hmm. I got your page up and I'll have to look at it afterwards, and I'm like, it's like, every time I take a Bigfoot, I don't know why I think you'd be filming in Maine. It's just something, I guess, because of stuff that I've been watching, I was like, whoa, they really see this, they think there's a Bigfoot in Maine, where are you guys filming it?
We're filming in Louisiana, down in the swamps of Louisiana. We got some really freaky terrain, and some great locations, just the scary cottages that the characters have to approach and talk to the people, and it's like, you know, as you're walking up with the camera, you're like, yeah, you knock on that door and you know when your party's going to die. That's just the way it works.
Yeah, it sounds really scary. It sounds kind of fun, too.
Oh, it's so much fun making a film like that. I have a big love for dramas. The first two films I did were dramas. I'm currently writing a horror/drama that really mixes the two very, very nicely. So I'm excited about that. But the horror is a very fun genre to film. Just because you get to do such, it really is fantasy at that point. You know, the drama, you feel like you're just kind of like dramatizing real life. But horror, you know, you're doing something that's just bizarre and weird, and it just makes it kind of fun.
Yeah, I'm like, I don't really think I've ever really done any drama per se. Maybe I did one, but you know how sometimes it goes, you do stuff, but you never get to see your work.
Mm-hmm.
And it's just something where maybe someday I'll do a drama, maybe someday I'll work with you or, you know,
mm-hmm.
something, you know, because there was something, like I said, really caught my eye, and I thought it was really interesting. I would have loved to be part of it, but I kind of like, I'm also kind of, not that I'm skeptical, but when something's like a haunting, right, or,
mm-hmm.
you know, certain things, I don't like to do it because I know things, I don't want anything following me. Everybody,
mm-hmm.
some people have asked me to go on hauntings with them, and I'm like, no, because one of the guys that I call my big brother, I don't know if you've heard of him, is a horror, is a Cordeliza, and he's a paranormal investigator, metaphysical, and all this stuff, and
mm-hmm.
some people tend to think, because I call him my brother, you know, my big brother, they think I'm really just like him, and I'm like, no.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm not someone, I'm like, I don't really know how to do certain things that he does, but it's like, because I believe in certain things, that's why I try to stay away from them and be like, yeah, it'd be cool, but then it's like, you know, I'd probably be like, I don't want anything, follow me home. Bring anything home, and I'm like, you know, because the battleship was supposed to be haunted, and I'm like,
mm-hmm.
I was like, man, it must have been so cool making the film. Are you done making that, what was it called? Was it called USS Salem, or what was the name of that film?
Well, yes and no. Both done and not even close. We shot The Infested Ship, which was a short film there, and that was, once we shot that, the manager of the ship was so happy with us, he immediately invited us back for 3 more features. So we've shot Night Aboard the Salem, all the principal photography on that is done. We're now working on wrapping up the editing on Night Aboard the Salem. We have Haunted Ship coming up. Haunted Ship is actually being directed by Joe Scherbonik, who is the director of The Watcher. You know, the Watcher, Marisa Tomei, Keanu Reeves, James Spader. But anyways, so we're going to be doing Haunted Ship later this year, and I am actually currently working on, I can't really give a whole lot of details, but a very big contract for Night Aboard the Salem to be turned into a trilogy.
Into a what?
A trilogy.
Oh, cool.
Yep. So we have a lot of different things coming up there. And I have to say I love the ship. I have now stayed aboard the ship, and I talked to one of the guys on the ship, and he said I've stayed aboard the ship longer than anybody has stayed aboard the ship since it was decommissioned, which was kind of funny.
Was it scary or it's really haunted? Did you see anything?
I saw a couple of things I cannot explain. I'm not going to go far.
Like what? Are you able to talk about it, or will
sure.
you talk about it?
Sure, I don't mind talking about it.
Okay.
I did see a lot of people. One of the funniest things was how many people were really, really scared of it. I really enjoyed that. And sometimes scaring them, too. It was just too good an opportunity because people would walk in there thinking, you know, they were the only one on there. And then you're sleeping below deck, and you're like, oh, that's another victim to scare. That was fun. But anyways, the weirdest thing I saw on there, I was in this room, and you always have to power down all the lights at night, or you just get some outrageous electric bill, because the ship is about an eighth of a mile long, a quarter mile if you count the deck up the port side, I mean the passageway up the port side and passageway down the starboard side. You've got a whole quarter mile of ship that gets lit throughout during the day, and you have to power that all down to save money. So anyways, I was walking the ship, powering it down before night, and I went into this one room. I was turning off some of the computer systems, and I noticed on the floor a movement, and it was very quick, and to the point where it moved toward me, and it was something that was moving so quickly. I jumped as if it was, you know, something reaching for me, and then I looked down, and it was a shadow that was moving that had moved over from the side and then was running circles around me and kept trying to cut in under me and then just faded away. But the funny thing was, it was just a shadow. It didn't seem to be associated with anything moving in the room. But then, it disappeared very quickly. I checked the room out for anything that might be casting a shadow, and I never figured out where the shadow came from. That was the weirdest thing I saw.
Oh, my God. I would have been freaking and geeking.
But,
so, anything else happened to you or anybody else while you guys were there?
Well, let's see. I mean, one of the actors decided to challenge one of the ghosts to kill him one night, and he didn't get killed. So, at least the ghosts are friendly.
What? You should never do that.
Yeah, I didn't think that was smart, but it wasn't me. So, I was prepared to film it if he get killed.
Wow, tell that person it was stupid. You never want to do stuff. You never want to anger, you know. I mean, they're still here. I mean, they're just in another type of life form. It's just like, that's like when you're asking for trouble, because if you do stuff like that, you don't know if something's going to follow you for the rest of your life.
Yeah.
That's why I'm like, I don't cause any trouble. I don't go to places where, oh, let's go hauntings and, like, let's run around because we're all ghost hunters and, like, go here and there. And then usually what happens, they make a mess. And it's like, that's why I'm like, just behave. Stuff like that, mm-hmm. Don't follow me. So how was that one of your favorite films? To film, or, I mean, was there anything exciting happen on there? Was it horror? Was it action? What was this film like?
That
what
was
the plot?
That was horror. Actually, all the films we've shot aboard the USS Salem have been horrors, and probably always will be. They may be mixed with other type of genres, but it's an excellent location for horror because it comes with its own publicity as already being accepted as a haunted location. And plus, it's just incredibly scary if you look at the images it produces. Like, if you go to any of my web pages and just browse through the still images from it, you'll notice it just looks like a freaky spot.
Did you get any, did you capture when you were taking pictures, because you know when places are supposed to be haunted, when you were taking pictures, did you get any weird images or anything when you were taking pictures?
Well, we did get one bizarre thing. The most haunted location in the Salem is considered the anchor room. And one day, I decided to go take the camera into the anchor room and see what happened if I filmed in there. Well, took the camera in there, filmed in there, and the camera had some weird broken up footage on it and never really worked correctly again.
So your camera's broken now?
Well, I mean, it's not my only camera, but that camera was broken. Then I had to send it back to its manufacturer, and they had to replace the internals on it. And now it works. But the internals had to be replaced. Although, again, it totally could have been coincidence and it was going to die anyways, but it was still an interesting story whether or not it did happen to die when I took it into the anchor room.
Wow. Now, like, why, I mean, why is it haunted? Like, what is the background of the ship? Did people die on it, or?
That's actually an excellent question. The haunting is usually associated to its time in Greece. There was a very large earthquake in Greece that the USS Salem sailed to give relief effort to, and they took on, I think, over 1,000 Greeks during that relief effort. And many of them died aboard the Salem. And from kind of that era on, there have been stories of hauntings aboard the ship. But nobody's really, that I've heard of, you know, pinned it down to a single, this is the haunting story. Mm-hmm. As I said, the weirdest thing I had, a first-hand experience with was a shadow. I couldn't figure out where it came from. So I don't really have much of a handle on that myself. But it was, at the very least, a very interesting ship. The biggest thing I noticed about the ship was you get on the ship and it's just, it's grand. You're on a giant, it's like a floating little country in and of its own self. You got everything there. It fosters, if anything, a sense of pride. I mean, like, even just when I was, living on the ship for those few months alone, just wandering the halls, you felt kind of like a captain. There's a certain coolness about just being like, wow, something we as in, a nation, whatnot, built. It's just cool.
Yeah. I mean, I bet that's got to be awesome. That with the ship itself, in the whole film, are you able to talk a little bit about the plot, or?
Unfortunately, at this moment, I don't talk about this plot, because this plot is kind of, it moves so quickly that I start throwing twists in at the first 5 minutes, and I just keep doing that. I will say it is the most complicated story I have ever written or seen. And it's kind of fun in that way. It's very much a sci-fi horror.
Okay, I got you. You'll have to come back on the show when you're able to talk about the plot. I'm like, what? You gonna finally tell me now?
All right, fair enough. Well, hopefully we'll all get a chance to see it in festivals or theaters or something. I've recently made a connection with two major networks that are interested in getting at least a limited theatrical showing, which would be cool.
Sweet. Let me know if you ever need a real crazy girl. I'll be up for it.
All right.
Yeah, I mean, you didn't see, I don't think you've ever been to my Facebook. I mean, some stuff, I was like, hey, if you want to, like, an authentic Boston actress, I'm putting you on the spot. If you ever think of me, I know you got to auditioning, but if you ever want to put me in a film, let me know.
All right, sounds cool.
Yeah,
well, I
just like, huh?
No, I was just going to say, I found in film 90% of success is all due to networking.
Yeah, that's definitely true. And I think it's just like one of those things where, I forget how we found each other, something off Facebook, and I think, I don't know if I liked your film or something, and I ended up, I think, donating towards the film, the one, Night Aboard Salem, and I think that's how we got connected. I don't know if
that
it was something like that.
That might be, I tried to friend everybody who gave, any donation on Night Aboard the Salem, which is actually the first time I ever did any Kickstarter or anything. But I tried to friend everybody who was involved so that we could stay in touch. And So that was a lot of fun, and I met a bunch of very cool people through that. Like, I don't know if you noticed, but Adam F. Goldberg, who is producer and screenwriter for Fanboys, he donated some money himself for an executive producer credit. So it's kind of fun. So now I know I've been in contact with Adam F. Goldberg about other projects as well.
Really? Does he really, if he's interested, does he really, like, put money towards film, like for credits for a film?
No. It was really just a one-time thing. I was actually just talking to him just about other stuff more. Not so much. I don't like asking for money. That's not my thing.
Yeah.
Some people are really good at it. I don't do it.
I'm not like a promoter per se. I talk, and I know people listen, but as far as able to, like, projects that I'm on, like the film, I don't know if you heard about Valkyrie, the one that I'm doing where I'm playing a superhero and we're playing in Valkyrie and we're taking horseback riding lessons and we have to train more to do on fight teams. And I think, you know, with the horror, he's looking for people, I think, I don't know if you want to say donate. What is the correct term when you look people to...
I think they usually call it backers or backs.
Backers, that's it. Like maybe a backer in the film and stuff. I don't know how to do that. I don't know how to, you know what I'm saying? Because I feel like I don't want to make it sound like I'm begging, but I don't know. I'm not a promoter per se. I just talk. And that's all I do, talk. People listen. But how do you get to bring the money? Do you know what I'm saying? It's like, how do you get someone interested? Because I'm a very interesting person. But how do you go further the step to be business smart? To make it sound like grabbing someone's attention, because it seems like you're doing a pretty good job. And I'm like, I have no experience. I mean, I have a radio show, and doing things that I'm doing. I feel lucky. But to bring on board for a Falk here, how do you get backers? I don't know how to do it. I talk and talk. People know it's there, know what we're about. And just being an underdog, showing people like it. But with anything, which you do know, you need money. And you know, to train, even to do our own fight scenes, because even, you know, you got to be fed that day, but when you do your own fight scene, you eat twice as much on set. I'm not kidding. Like, when we go, we're like, we're out in the cold filming. It is so cold. And as you know, Maine is like the North Pole.
Oh, it's brutal. I filmed there. Oh, it's brutal.
Oh, it's so bad because we're filming on Saturdays. It's really cold. We have nothing on our arms. I think we're going to make capes and stuff, you know, to add to our costume. But we were running around 2 weeks ago. We were knee-deep in snow, and we had – it was just skin on our arms, and it was so cold. I was like, oh, my God. And I tried to do a Jackie Chan trick where when he would get mad. And he sticks his head between his legs to make the blood rush to his head to make him look mad. I says, I'm going to do a Jackie Chan trick just to keep warm. Stick my head between my legs. And I'm like, I go, oh, it works. And, you know, but, you know, I'm hoping I'm going to learn how to get people's attention where I don't know how you do that. I mean, how do you get people to, you know, that's the secret. That's the thing I wish I knew how to do.
I guess it's the thing, one thing that I approach it from, because I'm uncomfortable with, and this was what makes me, in some respects, not a good salesman. I'm uncomfortable with giving somebody something less than what they deserve for their money. And so I really, when I put up my Kickstarter or anything like that, I really want to give them cool things in exchange for anything that they give to the project. So one of the things I saw, and this was in a, I saw in another project, and I said, I'm going to use that. They had a digital download of their thing, of their product that they were creating. And it was clearly underselling the price that it would be once it had been created. I was like, I love that idea, because the digital download is no real loss to the filmmaker himself. He puts up an electronic file they download to their computer, so he hasn't done any work to fulfill this reward for them, but they've gotten the movie. And you sell it for like $10. You can't buy a movie from a store for $10 unless it's, you know, like on clearance or really old crap one or something. And so I liked the idea of, on Kickstarter, giving them the option of buying the movie on a digital download for an incredibly cheap price, so that they can go ahead and feel like, okay, they put money in, and now we get to make our movie. But at the same time, they're not really putting out that much money. Actually, they're putting out less money than they would buying a similar product from Walmart or Kmart or something. So you're actually giving them, in essence, a deal while you're getting something good as well.
Yeah.
And so that's the way I approached it with, like, if you go to, and I had actually seen that about halfway through my raising money on Kickstarter for Night Aboard the Salem. So I don't know when you saw the project, but I had added that onto Night Aboard the Salem. So a bunch of people are going to get, you know, a digital download of the film as soon as we finish our post-production, which is actually coming up very quickly. So that's pretty cool.
Hmm.
But I wanted to give, in each case, I wanted to give somebody a solid something that they could feel good about what they got back for what they put into the project. And to me, that's really important. And I think both in, even on the small scale, where you're just asking, you know, your friends and like that to donate a little money, or on the large scale, it's definitely the same thing when you're talking to investors. I think it goes a lot farther if you're thinking, how do I do right by this guy? Okay, I want his money, but I want him to feel good about what he got back from me. And that's always been my approach. And it does, now there's a lot of sleazy people out there who don't take that approach and then make their sales pitch look a little cooler because mm-hmm. they don't care that they screw you. But I guess at the end of the day, I want to feel cool about what I did. So that's just the way it's going to be.
Yeah, it really is something, like, to try to figure out. I'm just, you know, I try to, you know, like I said, it's just something that I wish I could figure out
mm-hmm.
to do. Because being creative, I'm very creative, talkative, just the business part, I gotta learn. You know,
mm-hmm.
that's what I really gotta learn.
Well, what the key is like, on the film, one of the films that we're raising money for right now, we're talking to both investors and we're raising money on Indiegogo. It's a Skookum, the movie, and it's actually, if you want to check out the website, it's just www.skookumthemovie.com, and Skookum is spelled out weird, S-K-O-O-K-U-M, but anyways, we're doing that same thing where, you know, we're selling the movie for a digital download, and then we're giving all kinds of different other things that people can get, you know, at different tiers of putting their money in. But to me, I guess the thing is, you know, you set up a good display where you have, get a trailer up on there, get a, you know, a good write-up of what's going on, give them details, give them pictures, and give them updates. You know, if you're trying to raise money through something like Kickstarter or Indiegogo, you can't just put up one picture and say, I'm going to make a movie, give me $50,000. To be entirely honest, that really ticks me off. I mean, you're asking, you know, your friends and your family quite often to give you a little money, and $50,000, that's a little bit extreme. I mean, the most I've ever asked for on any crowdfunding thing was actually $10,000. I just, like, come on, you know, you're begging, pleading. Don't be desperate. Find some other way to get to make up the difference. This is just trying to help.
Mm-hmm.
And that might be a bit harsh of me, but I see so many people literally asking for $250,000 on Indiegogo, and I just want to slap them.
Yeah, because you can actually make a very decent film, like,
mm-hmm.
for not a lot of money.
Well, and I suppose I wouldn't mind somebody asking for $250,000 if they gave you a decent something in return. But most of them are like, give me $50 and I'll give you a special thanks. Yay.
Yeah.
That's not cool. But, like, what was the thing I was going to say? But anyways, yeah, so I just think it's important to give them something that's worthwhile. And then you're just constantly updating them. We're in a world that's really, really interconnected. I mean, you got Twitter, you got Facebook, you've got all these different things. And there's a million ways to get somebody's attention through Twitter and Facebook and things like that. Like, one of the things I did for Night Aboard the Salem was I did a photo shoot, well, several photo shoots with several different models, and then put, you know, Night Aboard the Salem logos on there. I did the photo shoots right on the battleship, and so they were themed
That's
photos.
That's awesome.
Yep, and, you know, and then I would put the link, I would embed the link into the picture for the, you know, the Night Aboard the Salem's Kickstarter campaign. And so, and, you know, I put them up on Facebook whatever those, you know, there's a million picture sharing sites. And they were shared around a lot. Like, one of the pictures ranked up really, really high for a while if you just put in the keywords in Google image search, horror and model. It was really high up there. But anyway, so the pictures just got shared a lot, and they all had the link to the thing embedded right in there, and the text said you can buy the poster on Kickstarter. And so it was just another way to generate some publicity for the Kickstarter campaign. But the key is, and it's just the way Google works, it's the way Kickstarter works, it's the way Indiegogo works, the more links you have pointing to it, the better it is.
That's definitely true. I sit there and try to think, all I can do is talk. If you have more things like, believe it or not, I do a lot of networking off Facebook because, as you know,
I've met major investors on Facebook. It's ridiculous, the people that you can meet on Facebook. I mean, like, just downright silly.
Yeah, it's kind of amazing. That's how I've done a lot of networking, and I've met people through Facebook. And then it's like, now Facebook, you can video chat or Skype, and now it's like technology is incredible. But the thing is, sometimes is the auto communication gets lost in technology, and it's kind of like you kind of miss almost talking on the phone.
Everything's
like impersonal. You know what I'm saying?
Well, it is very impersonal. Once, you know, all these forms of texting, chatting, messaging, et cetera, they are, and there was a psychologist who mentioned this, and I can't, she said it a lot better than I did, but the beauty of the reason why we stick the text and like that is we can send that little text message off, and then you can ignore the response till whatever time you want to deal with it. So it's kind of a communication without the requirement of, well, actually, it's one-way communication without requirement to accept that other, the back talk, until you're, you know, in the mood for it or feeling like it or have the time. Whereas you start a conversation with somebody vocally and you're stuck listening to them when they're talking, not at your convenience. And so people are using texting as a way to make everything happen at their convenience.
It's true. And a lot of guys do that. They want to avoid talking. I mean, I guess, well, maybe women do that too, but you know what I mean? It's like, you know, they just avoid things.
Well, people,
they don't
want
to confront anything.
People who know me, they know I pretty much avoid all forms of communication altogether. I'm kind of the worst of that.
Yeah. But, you know, I mean, it's so much better because even talking on my radio show, it's more personal than talking, you know, in chat or whatever. Even video, I love doing video because it's almost like you're right there. And being up here, I've been away from my friends for so long, and it's like you can video talk with someone. You can, you know, also talk with anyone around the world, and it's like as if they're right there. So it's really kind of cool. You know what I mean? Well, to get back to the films, now, what are you working on right now? Is it
Right now I'm working on I'm actually working on several projects, but the two ones I'm focusing on most are Skookum, the one I just referenced, and The Abandoned Project. The Abandoned Project is that's a very cool film that we are developing, and actually it's kind of fun. Dustin Diamond, who's a Screech from...
no way! You got him?
Yep.
Oh, my God!
Yeah, that was kind of funny. I don't remember how we got talking to him, but so he's gonna be a fun part in the film.
Oh my God!
Saved by the Bell. That's why I could not think of the name of the TV show. But anyway, so that's a fun thing, and I can't talk about the lead that we're working on signing, but we're getting close to signing a very cool, very very cool lead. For that film. And what it essentially is think of like Hunger Games crossed with The Island. It's a post-apocalyptic film with a lot of conspiracy theory kind of intrigue going on there at the same time. And really great action. Like when I read the script, I was really sold by the action/adventure of it. It was very swashbucklery in a way that you don't get to see that much in films anymore. Usually it's the action in film now is geared toward being violence rather than, whoa, cool. And it's fun when you get to see action that's just cool.
Hey, well, you know, if you want anyone to shoot a bow and arrow,
right.
Let me know. I used to be on an archery team.
Sweet.
Yeah, I'm taking horseback riding lessons and everything.
Nice.
If you got a small little pot, hey, look me up. I know Shelly Nunchucks now. He's like, I'm all hooked up with Shelly. I wonder if she'll do something for me.
Well,
I know. I'm like, I'm sorry. I'm putting you right on the spot.
No, that's okay. You ever done that one is a little bit more difficult to set up with us because that one's down in California. But hey, if we ever come up with a reason to get you down there, that would be cool.
Yeah, that'd be awesome. Maybe I can go visit my film brother, the one I have a couple of them, but JG Anoni, he's out there in California. I don't know if you know who he is.
I'm terrible with names, so he could be basically Brad Pitt, and I wouldn't know.
The show Entourage on HBO was actually based on him and Mark Wahlberg.
He also
did a couple of things. He just got done, he worked with Jason Stratham in Safe. He just got done working with Harvey Keitel. There's quite a few things. You look him up, and he actually came from South Boston, and he's been doing a lot of things out there.
There's a lot of major actors from both Boston and Boston, New York, and even far upstate New York. But you see a lot of the actors come from this kind of an area over here.
Yeah, it's really kind of funny that you know they do like from Boston. And it's kind of cool because we got our accents. I think that works in our advantage.
Sometimes accents go a long way. There's got to be so many actors that just got famous for the way they speak.
Yeah, I am like, everybody's like, oh, you need to lose your accent and such. I says, hey, if it helps me get film roles, I mean, I'm not going to go look playing for Barbie or Southern Belle if this helps me, you know?
Yep. Well,
that's like
the... Oh, go ahead.
What's that?
Oh no, I had accidentally cut you off. Go ahead.
No, that's okay. I was just we were just talking about accents, and then I think you were gonna say something else.
Yeah, one of my favorite actors is actually Billy Crudup, and Billy Crudup is to me the proof that you've got to have something different, or you will never get noticed. Billy Crudup is an actor who doesn't have a signature, and because of that, I think he's, in essence, the perfect actor, because he becomes whatever part he is playing. He doesn't play that part like, when you see Brad Pitt play a role, he plays it like Brad Pitt, in every role. He does give it a little variation, but it's always Brad Pitt. So you look at it and you see that Brad Pitt signature. Same as Mel Gibson, same as, what's his name? Johnny Depp, he does put a little variation into his performances, but he's still always Johnny Depp. It's very rare to see an actor who comes at every role and really creates a new persona. Billy Crudup does that, at least I would argue that. And so when a lot of times when you see him in a film, you don't, I don't look at him as Billy Crudup. I just see him as the part. But when I see Brad Pitt or Bruce Willis, I see them as being Brad Pitt or Bruce Willis. And
yeah.
They are much, much more famous than Billy Crudup. But I think the problem is Billy Crudup is essentially too good. He took too much of himself out of the part, did his job too well, and in essence got a little bit forgotten for it.
Well, who is he? His name sounds familiar. I don't know if I'd actually know something.
My point exactly. I sincerely believe he's the best actor who's ever lived, and nobody knows who he is. Billy Crudup is, well, his most memorable role would probably be the naked blue guy in The Watcher. Or, let's see, he played, he's the lead in Without Limits, the film about the runner, with Donald Sutherland. He is, basically one of my all-time favorite films. I always get the name confused with another one that's very similar. Waking the Dead. Sorry about that. Waking the Dead, it's Billy Crudup, Jennifer Connelly, and I want to say I think it's Tom Cruise plays a cameo in there. Waking the Dead is a really touching drama. You actually wouldn't expect it with that kind of a name, but it's a really impressive drama about a guy trying to do what he sees is right, and it clashes with his romantic interest, who he really, you know, really is the love of his life, and it clashes directly with what she feels is right. And it's a really, really powerful story about just two people trying to live what they feel they need to live at the same time trying to be in love. Very cool story.
Hmm. Now, do you have, you already mentioned a favorite actor. Now, when you were growing up, I know you said you accidentally, you know, got into film and stuff. Did you have dreams of growing up to be in the acting business or something else? Or?
Excellent question. I feel old because I really don't remember what I dreamed of as a kid. No, I think, as a kid, I think I always wanted to be a writer. And in essence, I feel like that's still what I'm doing. I spend a good 50% of my time on the creative coming up with what I'm going to do aspect. But I kind of just shifted that goal from being a writer to being a writer-director and sometimes producer now. But to me, I've always just loved writing. I've written literally since I could reach a keyboard.
Oh. Sweet. And what did you really wanted to be when you were a kid? Mm-hmm. Like, did you want to be a baseball player or anything like that? Or?
Well, that's an excellent question. I'm trying to think back on, I don't think I had a, before I really decided I wanted to be a writer, I don't think I had a particular thing. I mean, as a kid, I think every American wants to be an actor at some point. It's just kind of part of our culture. Voice acting, I actually always had a very large respect for because I used to listen to a lot of radio dramas, and I was always fascinated by their ability to tell a complete story with detail and action and location all through sound effects and voice without making a lot of exposition on, oh, so-and-so's walking over there. Because I'd heard some radio dramas that were just really impressive. And, you know, I was fascinated as a very, very young by it as a medium from an acting point of view. But then I kind of switched. Well, I mean, I've got several problems with being an actor. I'm just not very hot, and my voice isn't very good either, so it doesn't even work out very well for radio.
Oh, and that's like, but you should know that's not like what acting is based upon.
I hate to break it to the world that it really does turn a lot on that. Whether or not we like it, it kind of does. I mean, there are several great actors who are not incredibly hot, but the honest truth is, it does help, whether we like it or not.
Yeah, I guess you say it could like to the point, but there's so much things out there in the entertainment business. I mean, come on, if you really think about it, I mean, look at the people, the guys that play, like, you know, sometimes like the mobsters. They're the most out-of-weight guys in the world, but people like them.
The mobsters get lucky. They get to get their own unique class of people. Totally true. And that's actually an excellent example of getting to do just about anything. But, you know, in general, we do have definite stereotypes which we are determined to fill when we're casting. And that's actually something I've complained about long, is that, you know, it was a lot of fun in my film, Isabel. I wrote the story about essentially a middle-aged guy, so he's about 45, and I casted a guy that, I don't know, I can't remember his exact age at the time, but he was basically 45, and he arrived, and he hadn't met the romantic interest of the film, and he met her, and he's like, wow, you casted somebody my age, and I was like, yeah, you're supposed to be falling in love with this person. They have to be your age. And he's like, but nobody ever does that. They always, like, cast my romantic interest as some teeny bopper. I'm like, no, this is a serious film. That's what film does. They're always pairing for sex appeal rather than trying to make it look real. And that bugs me.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I know.
It's time and time again that the industry and the art is dominated by silly nuances of the field. I actually find it incredibly annoying that we have to, when we want to make the marketable film, we have to put the name talent in there, who probably is much worse an actor than some actor you can find with several good auditions. But this one actor got famous because they had some porn tape or some other equally stupid drug incident, and now they're famous, and they're never going to study how to act or do anything like that again, but because they're famous, they don't need to, because they're going to keep getting rehired, because the world is stupid enough to watch any movie from some famous person like it's worth something.
Oh, you know what? I always say, and I tell everyone this, because you know how it is. I swear that you have to make something. I think of this all the time, right? Mm-hmm. I want to go out and make the stupidest film because that'll make money. Then I can take that money to make a good film. Because if you really think about it, look at how many films out there that are so stupid. And you're like, okay, how does that get played? It just boggles my mind. And I'm sitting there going, man, I have to make a stupid film. And it's like, I hear this film, there was one called The Elevator, and it was the one before that, you know, it's like The Quarter. I think I'm going to make The Floor. Before you step into the elevator, beware of The Quarter. These are actual films. I am not kidding. It's like, I'm going to make Beware of The Floor, or oh my God, The Ceiling, look out for The Ceiling. If you make something like that, I swear, people will watch and say, like, I think we should make the stupidest film there is. I mean, do you remember The Blair Witch Project?
There is some value to making something so bad it's memorable. It's actually funny that you mentioned that. I've always had this idea for this incredibly slapstick action film that I wanted to do, and I keep telling myself one day that I'm gonna make it, and just because, and it's probably gonna be sadly a bigger hit than all the other ones that actually made a lot of sense and had something to say. But, you know, someday when I get a chance, I'm going to make it mostly just for fun. But it's definitely going to happen. I'm going to be curious to see how it's going to be different from the other ones in its showing and like that. But sadly, on that note, like what I was just complaining about talent is a lot of those films had nothing to do with the script. It had nothing to do with anything. It just had to be somebody had a favor. They called in. They got a named talent to play the part. Somebody rubber stamped it because it had a named talent. Bang. They got to the advertisement phase. Somebody rubber stamped it for a lot of money for advertisement. Bang. They told the American audience they had to go see it. They went and saw it because they were told. It made money. That happens over and over and over again. My favorite film of all time is probably Tristan and Isolde. That one barely broke even. I think it literally made like a couple dollars profit. At the same time, Ghost Rider, that Nicolas Cage with his flaming skull head, profited $30 million, maybe more. I can't really remember, to be honest. But Tristan Isolde is like, you think of Braveheart if Shakespeare had written it. It's just so much more powerful than even Braveheart, which Braveheart was amazing. And you get to the end where he's screaming freedom. You're like, how can you top this? You can top it with Tristan Isolde. It's just an amazing film, and it basically did nothing in the box office. But, you know, what happened? It got a bad draw through publicity. They had decided they weren't going to push it, and it pretty much went nowhere. But at the same time, they decided they were going to push Ghost Rider. They told the Americans to watch it. The Americans watched it, and they loved it because they were told to. It's kind of sad.
Yeah, I think that's what it ever in there, because people, you know, if they don't even make independent films and stuff, they're just going to go and watch it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I mean, that's practically what people are going to do.
Yeah, we're driven to like or dislike whatever we're told to like or dislike, as opposed to there's so much good stuff out there. I was at Atlantic City Film Festival, and I saw the film, Johnny's Gone. It was made by Giorgio Serafini, and it is such a powerful film. It still hasn't gotten a decent release yet, as far as I know. I've been waiting to be able to get it on DVD. And,
what is it called?
Johnny's Gone. And it's a story about a mother whose baby is... let me see if I can get this straight. It's basically, the director wrote about the loss of his own daughter. His daughter had died, and he actually incorporated footage of his daughter into the movie that he had shot of her while she was alive. And so he shot it as a memorial to her.
Aww.
And it's such a beautiful film, just in so many ways, and it's not morbid at all. It really is a great story about someone in love with and dealing with the loss of a very close person. And such a great film. Written so beautifully, acted so beautifully by literal talents. Actually, one of my favorite actresses in there, she didn't have a single IMDb credit before that film. She comes on and just utterly blows it away. But again, you know, if she had been a named talent, everybody would have seen it. Everybody would have been raving about it. But they're not seeing it, and they're not raving about it because that's, you know, it's not how we work. It's just kind of sad.
So is it a tearjerker?
Very much so.
Yeah, you want me to cry. Why is it people always want me to cry? Because it's like... I know, like, films and stuff, because if you really think about it, there's so much crying in life, and I feel like, you know, I mean, I'm action and stuff like that, because I will be the loudest one at the theater crying, like, blubbering like an idiot, because if I see something, I want to stay at home because I'll be like, I'll hyperventilate in the movie theater because I know it'll be a good film, but I'll be the first one, like an idiot, crying like a baby in the theater. It's, just, it's embarrassing. It's really embarrassing going, you know, watching a good film, but I have to wait to go home because I have a meltdown, and it's like, even with Jackie, when he has a couple of films where he actually died, mm-hmm. Oh, my gosh, I lost it. I was like, oh, thank God I'm watching this. No Jackie in the And I'm at home. I go, I'm like, and that's why I'm like, I can't watch a drama in a film. I'll just have to wait to watch it at home. I don't mind a good film, but I'm going to spend about $15 for a ticket nowadays, I mean, it's getting up there. I want to be happy when I leave the movie theater. I have a meltdown when I watch a drama. So when you say drama, like, I always feel like it comes on DVD or Netflix because I'll lose it.
It's sad as it may be. I kind of have to agree. I like, I've got a pretty good home theater going on as well. So when I watch the dramas and romances, I usually watch those at home. But when you go to theater and you get that huge screen and hopefully 3D, I would really like to see a beautifully choreographed action sequence on that. That's what I spend my $15 for. Otherwise, I got my house with an almost equally good setup that I can watch a romance on. So I have to agree on that one.
Yeah, I'm like, you know, everybody teach their own, I believe that, but it was like, you know, I'm hearing, like, Jackie Chan's film, Chinese Zodiac, that's coming this summer. I heard it was in 3D, and I'm going, oh, my gosh, Jackie Chan in 3D coming right at you? You know
that'd
what I'm saying?
Awesome.
I want to be like, yeah, I want to be in the theater just exploding in my seat. I'm like, yeah, and then you're like leaving.
Mm-hmm.
You're like, I want to go and do what Jackie did after I left the movie theater, you know. As crazy as it sounds,
that might not be a good
that's
idea
me.
Inspiring people to try to do that.
Yeah, but like, oh, and it's like, you know, the stunts are dangerous, but it's like, yeah, I want to go do what Jackie did. I mean, that's just me. I mean, to each their own, but I'm a blubbering idiot if I go watch a drama, and it's just like so embarrassing. Imagine it's like past dates, they'd be like, what's wrong with you? I'm like, I'm trying not to cry, right? And I'm like, it's quiet. And I'm like, I'm trying, and it's just something, I turn like a little kid crying in a movie theater. I mean, even cartoons, you know, when they're, or something, some other characters, when you like a character in a film, right,
mm-hmm.
whatever it is, the thing it may be that you like, it doesn't matter who it is or whatever. When you like a character and they die in the film, I lose it. I don't care if it's action or whatever. I was like, no, that one can't die because I like that character, you know.
Yep.
And you like lose your mind because you want it to last forever. Sometimes when you really enjoy a film, you want it to last longer in the movie theater. I mean, that's just how
I
am. Because like, yeah, keep it going.
Like, I liked the film, but it was too long. How could you like it and think it was too long? That seems to me to be an oxymoron. If you liked it, you should have watched more. You should have wanted more of it. I don't understand the concept. I do understand the idea of somebody saying they ruined it with the ending. Okay, if they just cut maybe something like that. But the idea of I liked it, but it was too long always seems a little weird to me. I mean, when I like something, I want it to keep going.
Yeah, and it's something where, you know, I love, I don't know if this is you or not, but when I go to movie theaters, right, you know,
mm-hmm.
I make sure I go to the bathroom before I sit in my seat.
Mm-hmm.
Because I have to be there for the coming attractions. I have to be there for the whole film and for the credits. Because, you know, now, you know, when you get to know more and more people, you wait to see them in the credits at the end. I sit
exactly.
there and watch it.
Yeah, you got to see them in the credits too, yeah.
Yeah, because that's just how I am.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I was like, because it was funny because when I saw Jay in the film Safe and I waited to see his credits, and then when I went to see, I think it was Priest, and it was a horror kind of action.
Yeah, I know
and
what
it
that
had,
is.
Yeah, that Arnold Schoen,
mm-hmm.
he was the guy, he had a shaved head, he's a martial artist, he's a great martial artist. The thing is, if I had Arnold, okay, I mean, I would have,
mm-hmm.
besides, they kind of cheesy killed him.
Yep.
If I had Arnold Schoen in a film, do you know how big of a fight scene I'd have with this guy? Because I know how things are. I know they have to make the lead actors look good, but the thing with Arnold, he is a big, major martial artist.
Mm-hmm.
And he's got skills. He's very fast. And it was like, boom, 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 and he's done. And I'm like, that's
yep.
it? And I'm like, why can't they put him a little bit longer? I mean, he
yep.
doesn't have any lines. I never really seen him with any lines because I think he was in that film Something Hogs with John Travolta and Wild Hogs.
Wild Hogs, yep.
He was in that. He's been quite doing some films, and it was kind of funny because I was like, man, he was also, he did a quick thing in Safe, and it's like,
he had lines in Wild Hogs. He had lines in
yeah.
Wild Hogs, didn't he? Yeah, I'm pretty sure.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yep.
And it's kind of amazing with, you know, the biggest stunt people, where maybe they just want those parts. I mean, I can't speak for them because I was watching something with James Woo. He's
mm-hmm.
one of the biggest stunt people in Hollywood, right? And
yep.
I still have to see Tropic Thunder. I still haven't seen that yet. But I was watching Inception or something. It had Leonardo DiCaprio, and it had James Woo in it.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm sitting there going, they've got this guy, right?
Mm-hmm.
And they had him in one scene, and then they had a roof fall on him. And I think a pot got cut out. I'm going, wait, this is a great stunt guy. He's one of the greatest in Hollywood. Why are they not using him more? And I'm like, do they not want to take that big of a part? Like, I don't know if I could interview him and ask them.
A lot
of
times if you look at it, it turned out that it was either, you know, the fight scene got cut because people wanted the movie short. We have this desperate need to make our movies 90 minutes long and we lose the American audience. Or it simply can be, you know, they had written something in and decided it didn't really fit. And then so, you know, you see this character really feels like he should get a bigger part, just, you know, truncated right off. Which is sometimes fun when you take out a character that you think, you know, will be there for much longer. And it's like, oh, he's dead? What? That was, it's a lot of fun, particularly in writing a horror, when you can do that, is, you know, you establish this one character that everybody's like, oh, yeah, he's going to be the guy that I can like because he's not going to die. And you just kill him and it's like, what? No. He was the safe bet to like. I'm screwed now.
Yeah. Yeah, but, you know, I mean, you just want to see characters more. So, anyway, I'll probably be ending the show in a few minutes, but I just wanted to know, is there any other thing you wanted to bring up or any other future products, anything else? But to let you know, certain things you couldn't talk about, when you're able to talk about them, the plot, the
mm-hmm.
actors and stuff, you're welcome back on my show.
All right.
And, you know, just let me know, get in touch with me, you know, through Facebook, I'll send you my telephone number and stuff. So anytime you want some promotion, because after the show's over, even though it's live on the air, you can get the link and you can share it and you can use my show, for example,
cool.
for a free promotion for you.
All right. Thanks a lot. That's great. Well, I mean,
you're welcome.
Oh, sorry. Go ahead.
Oh, I just said, oh, you're welcome. I mean, anytime,
yeah.
Just let me know if you want, you know, even if you want a shout-out or something,
mm-hmm.
if something where you want to call in and say, hey, I got this new film, you're always welcome
cool.
to be a guest on the show.
Well,
if you're busy, you know, even 15 minutes or something, any new project, just let me know because on this show, it can be heard anywhere around the world. I know people from England have heard it, people from New Zealand, so I got some people. Maybe it's not a lot, but I've seen in the archives some of the shows,
yeah.
anywhere between 700 to about 1,200 people have listened to my shows. So,
very cool.
You know, people are listening to it, so let me know. And is there any, before I let you know, any other projects you want to talk about?
Well, let's see. I guess at the moment, I would actually just like to say thanks. It's been a lot of fun talking about films with you. It's always fun to exchange opinions and get to gripe about my perpetual cynicism about virtually everything. You know, American audiences, Americans, and filmmaking in general. I'm pretty cynical for the most part.
Yeah, well, if all else fails, what do I say all the time? Hey, you know, you can always watch back up a Jackie Chan film.
you'll never
lose with a Jackie Chan film.
Well, I've always said if you're always a cynic, you'll never be disappointed, and it's worked out for me pretty well most of my life. I rarely get disappointed. But anyways, you know, it's been a great talking to you, and if anybody wants to check out either of the two projects that I'm working on now, Skookum the Movie or The Abandoned Project. I would love to have you check them out. You can go to skookumthemovie.com or The Abandoned Project. I do not remember its web address, which is really sad. I believe it's theabandonedprojectx.com. You can go right to Facebook, and it's The Abandoned Project X on Facebook. Both of those are raising money on Indiegogo, so you can also go right on and for $10 get the digital download of the film. And as I had said earlier, that's a way that I've always liked raising money, because it gives you a concrete, you know, movie you can watch for a very reasonable price, and lets us make the movie so you can watch it.
Wait, and you know, you can always go to your Facebook page and follow us. Is it Jack Schuyler?
Yep, Jack Schuyler. It's Jack as in the normal Jack, but Schuyler is Schyyler.
All right, that sounds cool, and I thank you very much for being my special guest on my show tonight. Thank you.
All right, thank you. Talk to you later.
All right, bye-bye.
Bye.
Oh, very interesting. I love having guests on my show, and you can check them out on Facebook and his projects. And I like to end the show with a song I do take to heart right now, part of a film that I am being a superhero, a dream come true, playing a Wonder Woman in this film called Valkyrie, and I'm one of the Valkyrie. Once again, the song is called Battle Song by the man, the myth, and legend himself, Ahura Zakora, the Lisa, and his beautiful, lovely wife, Sonari. And just like any film, music sets the mood. This song, Battle Song, will help set the mood for one of our epic battle fights in the film. So everyone, remember, if you have a dream, you're as good as anybody else, and you go for it. Well, everyone, have a very good night, and enjoy this song. Draw.